Beginning now the satsang session of 6th June 1985. Continuing Savitri, Book 3, Canto 3.
As against the glorious world in which Ashwapati finds himself, against this glory of spiritual states, the spiritual states in which Ashwapati is watching, their parallels and yet their opposites floated and swayed. Against that glory, elsewhere, their very opposites, kind of parallels, were swaying side by side, and they were eclipsed and shadow-like, as if a doubt-made substance flickering pale. The character of these parallel worlds was as if they were like shadows. They eclipsed the reality, and as if they were made of the substance of doubt. One could not be sure of their existence. Flickering, pale. So in all ways, they were the very opposite of the positive states of glory where Ashwapati was situated. This other scheme, two vast negations found. That is, this parallel scheme founded, based, two negations, contrary to the positive version of the reality described so far. And what are those two negations? A world that knows not its inhabiting self. There is this world, but it is not really aware of the self which is inhabiting it. The world moves, the world goes on, unaware of the self within it. A world that knows not its inhabiting self labors to find its cause and need to be. It is not aware of the self, and perhaps that is why it wants, it exerts itself to find the cause for its existence and the need for its being what it is. This world is pursued by this inquiry. How has it come to be and why? The second negation is a spirit ignorant of the world it made, obscured by matter, travestied by life, falsified by life, struggles to emerge, to be free, to know and reign. This is the second negation. The spirit which has made this world is ignorant of the world it has produced because it is obscured overlaid by matter, falsified by life, and it continuously struggles to emerge through matter, to be free, to know and dream. So these are the two negations, a world that is ignorant and a spirit that is suppressed and does not know why. And tries to emerge out of its state of obscurity. These were close tied in one disharmony, both the spirit and the world, which are in two conditions of negation, they were closely tied in one disharmony. Normally we speak of harmony, but here the poet says that they were thrown together in one disharmony. Yet the divergent lines met not at all. Though they were thrown together, these two negations, their lines never met. They continued to be disparate. They continued to pursue their own lines without meeting each other. Further, of this world, three powers governed its irrational course. The movement of this world is certainly not very rational. It does not go according to mental reason, logic. It has its own large lines of movement, irrational course. And what are these three powers? First power is, in the beginning, an unknowing force. There is a force which does not know in our way, in our manner, that is driving everything, what we call energy, what we call force. In the beginning, an unknowing force. In the middle, an embodied, striving soul. If at the outset we become aware of an unknowing force, in the middle of the journey, we become aware of a striving soul that is embodied in this world. And the third power is, in its end, a silent spirit denying life. That is the total negation of life. The bare spirit which contradicts the movement of life. So first the force, second the soul, third the spirit. Now between these three, the world is tossed about. A dull and infelicitous interlude unrolls its dubious truth to a questioning mind. The mind, as it develops, goes on questioning. What is it all? And it questions the dubious truth, the doubtful truth, the truth that spreads doubt everywhere, which is unrolled before its eye by a dull, infelicitous interlude. The intermediate stage between the origin driven by force and the end ruled by the spirit, in between, where the mind is a dominant factor, it is questioning, what is it, what could it be? And the mind Why does it question? Why does it logicize? Compelled by the ignorant power to play its part. There is a power at work. It is still in the shadow of ignorance. But it compels the mind to question, to analyze, to understand. Not only to understand, and to record her inconclusive tale, a story without end, the mystery of her inconscient plan. The power compels the mind to record the mystery of her inconscient plan and the riddle of a being born from night. The mind also has to take account and register this riddle, problem, question, insoluble question of this being, the soul, being born from night in conscience by a marriage of necessity with chance. Everything looks as if it is necessity. And then we see the play of chance. So to the mind it appears, this coming together of necessity and chance has engendered this being from the bosom of night. This darkness hides our nobler destiny. The darkness that is around us, the darkness that dominates this existence, really conceals our nobler destiny. Darkness is not absolute, it is not ultimate, but there is something else. And as the darkness dissipates, recedes, we begin to get glimpses of our destiny, which is nobler than being always shut up in the darkness of ignorance. A chrysalis of a great and glorious truth. This darkness hides our nobler destiny. A chrysalis of a great and glorious truth. That is, there is a particular insect. So before it comes out in its true colors, there is a covering, and that covering slowly falls off and the insect comes, life comes out. So this is the chrysalis. The darkness really is a cover for some great and glorious truth to emerge. It stifles the winged marvel in its sheath. Winged marvel is the soul. It suppresses it. Why? Lest from the prison of matter it escape, so that the soul, the spirit, shall not escape, and wasting its beauty on the formless vast, merged into the unknowable's mystery, leave unfulfilled the world's miraculous fate. That is to say, one idea, if the spirit or the soul within is not compelled to struggle and to learn by experience and grow, it will just escape from the shell of matter and merge into the unknowable mystery of Brahman, leaving this miraculous fate of the world unfulfilled. If the soul that is embodied were to escape from the round of matter and life and merge itself in the supreme mystery, the world will be left unfulfilled. That is why this surrounding darkness, ignorance, is playing a role in forcing this soul, winged marvel, to go through the round of evolutionary struggle. Otherwise, it will only waste its beauty on the formless vast. Instead of manifesting that beauty on earth, it will be wasting it in that vastitude without form. As yet, thought only some high spirit's dream, the subject is a new creation. Now he says, that new creation from the old shall rise, is the poet's observation. He says, as yet thought only some high spirit's dream, some people think it a new creation is only a dream of some high spirits, high saints, high mystics have dreamed of a new creation. So some people think it like that. Or a vexed delusion in man's toiling mind. Or this very idea or the concept of new creation is taken to be a kind of an illusion formed in the laboring mind of man. He's so tired. Just as when you go in a desert, you imagine there is a mirage. There is water, there is green, there is coconut tree and all that, where there is none. Similarly, these tired people think of a new creation. As yet thought only some high spirit's dream, or a vexed delusion in man's toiling mind, a new creation from the old shall rise. This is a prophetic statement. A knowledge inarticulate finds speech. Now he illustrates how that new creation is going to come. A knowledge inarticulate finds speech. A knowledge which so far has not been able to be expressed in words, articulate, organized in language, shall find its right speech. Beauty suppressed, burst into paradise bloom. Beauty that is suppressed now, as things are, shall burst into bloom as if in a paradise. Pleasure and pain dive into absolute bliss. Pleasure and pain, the dualities which dominate life today, will, what is that word now? Dive, sink, plunge into absolute bliss. In the new creation, the knowledge of truth will be expressed, beauty will bloom, and pleasure and pain, the dualities, will disappear into an unmitigated, permanent bliss. And not only that, a tongueless oracle shall speak at last. Oracle, you know, is the speech of prophecy. Either an image or an idol or an inspired priest, whoever it is. An oracle is a supernatural prophecy made through any agent. So he says, a tongueless, but this miracle will be tongueless. No tongue will be needed to broadcast this miracle. I'm sorry, oracle. A tongueless oracle shall speak at last. That is, everybody will know this oracle without its being uttered through a tongue. the superconscient conscious grew on earth. At present, it is superconscient to us. The reality, the truth, or whatever, it is above our reach. That is why we say it is superconscient. And that will grow conscious on earth. It will no more be superconscient. It will be conscious on earth. The eternal's wonders join the dance of time. The marvels of eternity will join the dance of time, means the movements of time. At present, the eternal is somewhere and the temporal is somewhere else. But the movements of time and the marvels of the eternal will play together. But that is some distant dream. But now he says, but now, when he looks below to these two negations, all seemed a vainly teeming vast, a large, vast amplitude, vainly teeming, without purpose, crowding, upheld by a deluded energy. And this teeming vast is supported by an energy which is deluded. It is thinking, it is serving some purpose. To a spectator, self-absorbed and mute, to that Purusha, to that self, the watching, for his benefit, all this vainly teeming vast is upheld by a deluded energy. To a spectator, self-absorbed and mute, careless of the unmeaning show he watched. He is not interested in what is going on because he knows the show is unmeaning. But still, he watches. Regarding the bizarre procession pass, this strange, unaccountable procession of events in the flow of time, pass, and he watches without interest, like one who waits for an expected end. He watches because he is quite sure that the whole thing will come to an end at some point. So he says, like one who waits for an expected end. And then he turns to Ashwapati. He saw a world that is, from a world to be. Ashwapati is above, in the world that is to be realized. From that height he is seeing, looking at this world that is at present. He saw a world that is, from a world to be. There he divined, rather than saw or felt. He intuitively knew, rather than he saw or felt. Far off, upon the rim of consciousness. The consciousness is spread out, and on some border, edge, he sees transient and frail this little whirling globe. The ocean is of consciousness, and on the far rim of that consciousness is this globe, which is whirling, transient. It was not there before, it will not be there hereafter. And frail, weak. And on that globe itself is fragile, and on the rim of consciousness. And on this globe, and on it, left like a lost dreams, vain mold, he sees something there. It is something as if a shell left there from a dream which is over, a fragile copy of the spirit's shell, a very breakable copy, not the original shell, copy of the spirit's shell. And what's that? His body gathered into mystic sleep. He sees his own, he is there in a subtle being, you know, and he is watching his own body on that globe, on the border of that globe, like a vain mold of a dream, a fragile copy of the spirit shell. The spirit must have a form, and this is a very fragile, breakable copy, and that is his physical body below. His body gathered into mystic sleep. The body is in trance. That is why his subtle being has been able to grow higher and higher without being pulled back, because the body is in trance. His body gathered into mystic sleep. A foreign shape, it seems, to his consciousness in the superconscient levels. His own physical body looks a foreign shape, a mythic shade, a shadow. A shade means a shadow, mythic, which perhaps never existed. The difference is so palpable, so acute, that he wonders whether that body has any truth in it, has any reality. A foreign shape, it seemed, a mythic shade. And further, alien now seemed that dim, far universe. The universe from which he has come up looked to him alien, totally foreign to his true nature. Self and eternity alone were true. This far universe, which is now so dim, is seen as alien, not true. Alien to truth. And then what is true? Self and eternity, to which he is so close, on the threshold of which he is standing. Self and eternity alone were true. When he is feeling that, at that moment, then memory climbed to him from the striving planes. From below, there are so many planes of existence. There are striving to evolve and acquire the nature of the spirit. Then memory climbed to him from the striving planes, bringing a cry from once loved, cherished things. All the things that he had once cherished, once loved, they are sending a cry to him from below. And to that cry of things from the striving planes below, to the cry as to its own lost call, a ray replied from the occult supreme. There is a response, there is a reply from the supreme occult truth. To the supreme, it is not alien. It is not foreign. That is why it feels, as to its own lost call, it replies, a ray, a portion, replies from the occult supreme. And now the poet explains, for even there, even below, the boundless oneness dwells. That truth of oneness is not only on the top, on the higher altitudes, on the peaks, but there even on the depths. The boundless oneness dwells there also. And the cry that comes is recognized to be of the same oneness by the oneness above.
Here ends the satsang session of 6th June 1985.